You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Maria Carter, filling in for Mike Green. For decades, the northern spotted owl has been at the center of debates over forests and logging in the Pacific Northwest. But now, new research from Oregon State University suggests there may not have to be a trade-off between protecting spotted owls and restoring forests to better withstand wildfire. Joining us is Jeremy Rockwhite. He's a postdoctoral scholar working with the U.S. Forest Service through the Oak Ridge Institute for Science and Education. He led the study and joins us to talk about what the findings could mean for the future of forest management and spotted owl conservation. Jeremy, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hey, good morning, Maria. Thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, you know, for people like myself who mostly remember the spotted owl from the logging debates of the 1990s, why is this species still such an important part of forest conservation and conversations about that today?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the spotted owl, you know, we're all mostly familiar with sort of the, you know, the logging eras in the 80s and that, and sort of the big conflict, the timber wars, so to speak, with respect to spotted owls. So as a result of that, the spotted owl was listed in 1990 as a threatened species under the Endangered Species Act, and which caused a timber injunction, and ultimately the amendment, or the Northwest Forest Plan Amendment, which amended all of the forest plans within the range of the northern spotted owl, and essentially created this sort of ecosystem-wide management approach to conservation throughout the Pacific Northwest. And so for that reason, the spotted owl today, despite its dwindling numbers, is still very relevant to sort of conservation issues throughout the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, and my understanding is that your research focuses on Southern Oregon and Northern California. How are these forests different from some of the wetter forests farther north in the owl's range?
Yeah, so the dry forest ecosystems in the southern part of the owl's range, which includes the Klamath Province and the Southern Cascades as well, were historically characterized by more frequent fire regime. And so essentially what this frequent fire did was that it maintained sort of a broad mosaic of different vegetation types across these drier forest ecosystems. And this is fundamentally different from some of the portions of the owl's range farther north, which are a more infrequent fire regime, and where we would get sort of that stereotypical large swaths of mature and old growth forest across the landscape. Frequent fire in the southern part of the owl's range, as well as in the dry forest ecosystems, the eastern Washington Cascades, really helped maintain that sort of mosaic of vegetation types that was host to a variety of different native species, not just the northern spotted owl.
Well, Jeremy, if we zoom out and look at the kind of landscape the spotted owls do best in down here, what would we see?
So studies back in the early 2000s kind of switched the script a little bit on what ideal or what high-quality spotted owl habitat in the southern part of the range looked like. Those studies found that in those drier forests, like in the Klamath Province, that the best quality habitat for spotted owls is actually a combination of these mature and old-growth forests, or what we call nesting and roosting forests, and some other vegetation types like historically occurring oak woodlands or early sorrel vegetation. And the reason for that is because those older nesting and roosting forests they benefit spotted owl survival rates. But those other vegetation types, when they're sort of intermixed within an owl's territory, actually benefits the reproductive output. So you get the highest survival rates plus the highest reproductive rates, or the most number of young that those owls are fledging, when you have this heterogeneous mixture of different vegetation types.
And just to break this down a little bit, is this kind of a situation where the owls are basically living in one place and maybe hunting for food in another?
Kind of, yeah. So, and the main reason for that is, as opposed to farther north in the range, where spotted owls eat primarily red tree voles and flying squirrels, which are also closely associated with these older, mature and old growth stands, in the southern part of the range, owls they still eat tree voles and flying squirrels, but they also eat dusky-footed wood rats, and those occur in higher abundances in different vegetation types like these oak woodlands or early sorrel vegetation. So spotted owls will eat, or they will forage in the older forests in the southern part of the range, but then they also forage along the edges between these older forests and these other vegetation types. So we like to think of it as sort of they like to have their kitchen close to their bedroom.
Okay. And, you know, so it sounds like the owls, to fully succeed, they need both that nesting and roosting habitat and then these kind of nearby other habitats as well to, you know, not just so they're nesting and roosting, but fully reproducing.
Sure.
Is that correct?
Yep, that's correct.
Okay. Well, a big part of your study deals with how the forest changed after decades of fire suppression. What's been happening to these landscapes over time?
Yeah, so, I mean, we're all really familiar with sort of the extensive logging that occurred in the last century and sort of the footprint that that's had on the landscape, because it's very noticeable. But when we started excluding fire, starting right around the time of European colonization, those sort of mature and old growth nesting and roosting stands that used to be mostly constrained to, say, drainage bottoms because this frequent fire sort of maintained those vegetation types down in those topographically sheltered areas. When we remove fire from the landscape, it basically allowed those closed canopy forests, which are mostly Douglas fir, to gradually expand outward from those drainage bottoms into those other vegetation types. And that sort of longer term landscape change is less notable than those footprints from logging. So essentially what's been happening is these landscapes have been homogenized. So we no longer have that diverse mosaic of vegetation types that we used to historically. And now there's more sort of homogeneously Douglas fir type forest, regardless of topographic position.
And does that increase the risk of severe wildfire reaching these areas that the owls rely on most?
Yes. That's a good question. It can. Because we now have these sort of these Douglas fir closed canopy forests in these uncharacteristic locations, and because they've developed there in the absence of fire, now when fire gets into these stands, it's much more likely that the fire is going to go into the crown and create a crown fire and then carry that crown fire down into those areas of pockets of nesting and roosting forest that more historically and naturally occurred down in the drainage bottoms. So it's actually making those nesting roosting forest stands in drainage bottoms more susceptible to fire.
And so it sounds like, so your team kind of studied what happened after wildfire events. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So we looked at fire behavior within these stands of nesting and roosting forest over the past couple of years to try to look for any sort of patterns on the landscape where that nesting and roosting forest might be more or less persistent when it burns. So persistence in this case means it was nesting roosting forest before the fire, and then it remains nesting roosting forest after the fire. And those are areas that are probably burning at low severity.
And my guest is Jeremy Rockwhite. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange, and we're talking about his research on the trade-off between protecting spotted owls and restoring forests to better withstand wildfire, and that there may not be as much of a trade-off as once thought between those two things. And for your research, how long of a time frame were you looking at?
So we looked at fires going as far back as 1985, but we had to sort of we used fires going all the way back to 1985, but because we were trying to understand how daily fire weather affects the persistence of these nesting and roosting forest stands, we also sort of had a separate data set that started in 2002, which is when the satellite imagery at least was able to sort of capture daily fire weather patterns and sort of map within each fire perimeter sort of the daily fire weather conditions in terms of temperature and wind speeds.
Oh, wow. So some of that satellite imagery really, it sounds like, helped your research.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, all of the maps that we used were derived from satellite imagery. So they all, it was very heavily satellite imagery based.
And what did you find about the kinds of places where spotted owls were most likely to persist after wildfire?
Yeah, so what we found was that there are very noticeable patterns to persistence of these nesting and roosting forest stands, and that the most persistent nesting and roosting forest occurs in these drainage bottom positions or more topographically sheltered locations, whereas the least persistent or the most susceptible to fire stands of nesting and roosting forest occurred in more mid-slope or upper-slope locations. And those are locations that historically most likely would have been composed of some other type of vegetation, like oak woodlands or meadows or shrub fields or something other than those closed canopy Douglas fir stands.
And in the research, you use the term fire refugia. Is that what we're talking about here? These like refuges, kind of?
Yeah, that's right. So the concept of fire refugia is that there are areas within fire perimeters that either burn less frequently or less severely than surrounding areas within the same fire perimeter. And so there must be something different about those areas that sort of where they persistently burn or consistently burn mm-hmm. at lower severity. And it seems to be mostly tied closely to topography. And so what we did is we sort of looked at fire refugia for northern spotted owls with respect to the forest types that they use for nesting and roosting.
And were the surviving nesting areas often connected to these kind of fire refugia landscapes then?
Yeah. So there are a couple other studies that have looked at fire refugia, and they're all kind of hinting at the same story, that these drainage bottoms that tend to be a little bit cooler and moister than more upslope locations are all sort of conducive to the development of these fire refugia. So there seems to be a really strong, like I mentioned, topographic template to where fire refugia occur in the landscape.
And for a long time, I think some people have worried that forest thinning or restoration projects could harm spotted owl habitat. Does your research complicate that assumption?
I don't think so. I think it adds clarity to it. So as we mentioned in the paper, there's this tension between management for spotted owls, which typically involves retaining and recruiting as much of that nesting and roosting forest as possible because of heavy logging in the last century and because the owl is still habitat limited in some areas. What this study suggests and what those past studies looking at high-quality habitat suggest is that we can retain the most persistent nesting and roosting forest where it occurs naturally and restore those other areas to what we think they look like prior to European colonization. And that would benefit both sort of forest resilience or restoration goals and improve habitat quality for spotted owls.
So in this case,
it would be a win-win, we think.
Yeah, so it sounds like your research is suggesting there are ways to both reduce that wildfire risk and support spotted owl conservation.
Yes, exactly. That's correct.
Is a larger goal just, you know, restoring that more natural pattern across the landscape? Does that benefit not just spotted owls, but it sounds like wildfire risk and probably other species too?
Yeah, in fact, that's a really great question, and I'm glad you brought that up. In a lot of ways, I feel like the spotted owl is sort of a victim of its success because the entire management throughout much of the Pacific Northwest is now centered around the spotted owl, which is great that it's brought attention to sort of this ecosystem-wide management, but it sort of relegates these other species to sort of, you know, a lower role, when in fact, you know, broader landscape restoration goals should benefit all of the native species. So, you know, we have an issue right now with pollinator species and other, the monarch butterfly is about to be listed, and those species could potentially also benefit from, you know, broad-scale landscape restoration within our public lands.
So your research is bigger than just spotted owls. Potentially, it could benefit a lot of things, it sounds like.
Yeah, potentially, yes.
And, you know, as wildfire seasons become more severe, what gives you hope about the future of these forests?
I think what gives me hope is that there's a lot of really smart people working on this issue and that have dedicated their lives to improving sort of a conservation of native species and ecosystems throughout the Pacific Northwest. And, you know, working with these folks daily just really kind of gives me hope for the future.
Okay, well, Jeremy, thank you so much for your insights on this. My guest
Absolutely.
Is Jeremy Rockwhite with the Oak Ridge Institute for Science and Education.